This is Rochelle Dixon. You've been listening to Voices from the Edge.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good morning. It's 9 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell. Her weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. Then at 10 o'clock, it's the Heather McCoy Show. At 11, it's a rebroadcast of the Black Book Talk interview featuring Renee Watson, author of the novel Watch Us Rise. At 11:30, Words and Pictures looks at Canopy Stories, a project that features 12 films by 11 filmmakers, each telling the unique story of a single urban tree. And don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. If you'd like to become a member, go to KBOO.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate. It's 9 o'clock and Press Watch is next.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring for a membership director, a morning news and public affairs director, and an evening news and public affairs director. The deadline to apply for these three full-time positions has been extended to July 18th by 11:59 p.m. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. For more information on these positions and how to apply, just go to kboo.fm/employment today.
Good morning. It's 9:01 Pacific time. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. Lots of news going on today. This week, I'm talking about propaganda in its various forms. War propaganda, climate propaganda, conformist propaganda. And I'll be presenting information that is not on the news agenda to talk about. And I will be presenting familiar information from viewpoints other than American corporate conformity. You can call in. We have an hour this time around. The number to call, 503-231-8187. There's big climate news happening today. Storm clouds boiling up in the Gulf of Mexico as that region suffers from the rainfall that has already come down due to climate change. Part of climate propaganda is not talking about what's going on. So we'll get around to that as well. If you were listening just over the last hour, you heard an excellent program. One of the things that was mentioned was that now famous image, the thing that's gone viral, of an older man walking down Portland Street with an anguished, injured, bloody face. And this is generally presented as something that shows, you know, how dangerous and violent those Portland protesters and those Antifa protesters are. And people are talking about it in that frame. That video is propaganda. It is a lie. The man was beaten after swaggering around, threatening a peaceful crowd, and waving around his metal-collapsing baton. The baton is intended to produce grievous injuries. He deserved his injuries. He came to a fight. He brought the fight. He made the fight happen, and he lost. Stupidity is painful. The fact that the image of his bloody face is instead used against the anti-fascist defenders is proof of the power of modern corporate state propaganda. So I want to say, wherever you see that video, denounce it, because it's a lie. And wherever you see it, say, show the first half of the video, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. And I want to state once again my personal gratitude to Antifa for protecting me and looking after the peace in the streets of Portland many, many times now. I won't say more, too many times to count, but many times over the last couple of years, I've been grateful to see Antifa there, and I'm very much one of their supporters and will not apologize for it. Right now, the U.S. is attempting to gin up a war with Iran, so I've got some information on that. You need to know about the economic warfare that is being perpetrated against the nation of Iran, and I want to present some viewpoints about what's going on to help you with your perspective. Although I'll start with a fairly conformist viewpoint from the British publication The Guardian, just to set the stage here, three Iranian boats have attempted to impede a British oil tanker in the Persian Gulf, further deepening tensions in the vital shipping channel off Iran. The incident took place in the Strait of Hormuz through the commercial vessel through which the commercial vessel British Heritage was attempting to pass. UK government statement released on Thursday morning said, quote, contrary to international law, three Iranian vessels attempted to impede the passage of a commercial vessel, British Heritage, through the Strait of Hormuz, end quote. The British frigate HMS Montrose was, quote, forced to position herself between the Iranian vessels and British Heritage and issue verbal warnings to the Iranian vessels, which then turned away, end quote. Iran's Revolutionary Guards rejected the claim that they tried to stop the British tanker. The semi-official Fars News Agency reported U.S. defense officials had told Reuters that they didn't know anything because they're just defending the U.S. and they can't see as far as Iran being into defense. No, that's not what they said, because when we mean war officials, we say defense officials, because we always want to frame our warfare as defense. The phrase is, U.S. defense officials had earlier told Reuters that the incident happened at the northern entrance of the Strait of Hormuz. And, of course, Strait of Hormuz is the pinch point there where the tankers must come through relatively shallow, narrow area and turn around. And it's always brought up as a point in which Iran could stop oil traffic if they wanted to. So that's what is claimed, and I don't know whether that actually happened or not, but that's the news, and that's going to be in the news cycle. So I have more information. This from Radio Havana, Cuba. As I was saying, different viewpoints. Iran has awarded dozens of contracts worth $6.2 billion to domestic companies to have oil production increase by 280,000 barrels per day, as part of a plan entitled the Extra Output Scheme. A senior official from the National Iranian Oil Company said on Wednesday that 10 out of a package of 33 contracts have been signed with companies and manufacturers based in Iran to start construction and installation of equipment of offshore and onshore oil fields in the country. Reza Degan said the contract showed that Iran was determined to increase investment in its oil industry despite sanctions imposed by the United States, which restricts the country's ability to export crude. The execution of the extra output scheme in the oil fields, this is a quote from the official, is a sign that the rights of the Iranian nations in joint fields are protected. Iran's oil minister says China's role in Phase 11 of the South Pars gas field should be sorted out soon. And skipping ahead in that information, as I said, from Radio Havana, Cuba, around a third of the value of the contracts, around $2 billion, would be dedicated to equipment and installation facilities. It would mostly be built by Iranian companies. Despite having its crude exports reduced as a result of sanctions, Iran has maintained its oil production at levels ranging from 3 to 4 million barrels per day since last year. Unverified reports suggest traceable oil shipments from Iran have declined to record low levels of below 500,000 barrels per day, although Iranian officials insist exports have continued through irregular channels. So irregular channels is what the fight is focusing on right now. If the Iranians did indeed confront the tanker, then it would have been in retaliation for some of their oil being stopped at Gibraltar. So this is the sort of tit-for-tat that's going on, and it's in the framework of these sanctions which stop shipments of medicine, which make everyone in Iran poorer. So information on the sanctions that the U.S. Is enforcing against Iran. This comes from Al Jazeera. This is the now Al Jazeera is a Sunni news source, and Iran is the Shia nation. This is something you should keep in mind. And Al Jazeera is much more aligned with the U.S. than it is often painted. So this isn't. This isn't way out of the frame, but it is from Al Jazeera. Iran faces economic terrorism for the United States with its sadistic sanctions, a Tehran official said on Wednesday. The Iranian ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency made the comments in Vienna during an emergency meeting called by the U.S. after Tehran breached the landmark 2015 nuclear deal this week. His name is Kazem Gharib Abadi, and he said, quote, the United States has imposed economic terrorism against some states, including through imposition of sanctions and extraterritorial application of them. The sadistic tendency of the United States to use illegal unilateral sanctions as an instrument to coerce sovereign states and private entities should come to an end, end quote. The IAEA confirmed this week that Iran exceeded the stockpile of enriched uranium permitted under the nuclear agreement known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. I'm going to stop right there and ask you if you're old enough. And it seems funny to me to say old enough because within the frame of my life, it wasn't that long ago that the IAEA was in the news, and we were talking about Iraq, and we were talking about weapons of mass destruction. And it was all a lie. It was all war propaganda. And this is war propaganda. And when you hear that Iran has exceeded the stockpile of enriched uranium permitted under the nuclear agreement, we're talking about they're going to go up to 5% enrichment. Please bear in mind that they cannot make a bomb with that. They need 95% enrichment. That's how ridiculous this frame is. And that's how much it is propaganda. So you're being had. If you are being driven to clutch your pearls over the enrichment of uranium in Iran, well, it ain't nothing. It's used the same way we use it in our hospitals here. It is used in hospitals. And radioisotopes have other uses. I would argue that probably they are overused and unnecessary in many cases, but we have a vast worldwide nuclear industry now, and that's radioactive water under the bridge. That's just the way things are. But as I was saying, this is the propaganda frame. Think about the IAEA, and kind of don't think about it is what the corporate-owned United States is saying to you, really. What they're saying is get ready for war. Think about that previous scare. Don't analyze it, because if you analyze it, you'll remember the previous scare was a lie, and you'll be against the war. This is very familiar stuff to me, and I kind of cut through the details now, I've noticed, when I'm talking about it, and it makes me sound maybe more opinionated than I am. I'm just reporting the facts. This is how the United States builds the case for war with its own population. This is how the United States gets people who have nothing to do with the fights of billionaires to send their children to kill, to be injured, and to die. Propaganda. Lies. Number to call your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Now, continuing with the article from Al Jazeera about the sanctions, Iran said it will disregard certain limits under the JCPOA, that's the deal, as long as the remaining parties to the deal, in particular the UK, France, and Germany, do not do more to mitigate the effect of the crippling U.S. sanctions. The spokesperson, Gharib Abadi, said the current impasse was the result of Washington's outlaw behavior. And that's the Iranian spokesperson. U.S. envoy Jackie Wolcott responded that Iran was engaged in nuclear extortion. So once again, I got to stop and say, as long as I'm repeating that stuff, no, they're not. Wolcott said, quote, there is no way to read this as anything other than a crude and transparent attempt to extort payments from the international community, end quote. And speaking for myself, of course, the opposite is true. President Hassan Rouhani said in May that Iran would roll back its commitments under the deal in stages every 60 days in an effort to force the other parties to deliver on their side of the bargain. Behrouz Kamalvandi, a spokesman for Iran's Atomic Energy Organization, said, quote, "It was a huge mistake by the Americans to leave the deal. That has caused all the problems. The European parties to the deal have had enough time to salvage the pact." Russia's ambassador to the IAEA, Mikhail Ulyanov, said after the meeting that the U.S. was practically isolated on this issue. He told the assembled diplomats it was an oddity that the meeting had been called by the U.S., quote, "the country that declared the JCPOA to be a terrible deal," end quote. And quoting him again, Mr. Ulyanov said, "In practice, it turns out that Washington is aware of the importance of the JCPOA," end quote. So these are some of the ways in which you are being prepared to go along with a war against Iran and or to go along with endless sanctions intended to collapse the economy of Iran, meaning to make the people of Iran, with which you and I have no beef whatsoever, suffer. Make them suffer. That will make the oil billionaires richer in the long term. That's what it's all about. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Now about the threat of war, again, turning to Radio Havana, Cuba, Iran's ambassador to the United Nations says his country would not hesitate to respond to any military threat from the United States. The ambassador told the BBC in an interview released on Wednesday, Iranians would not sit on their hands in case of an attack against the country amid escalating tensions over Iran's nuclear program. The senior diplomat made the remarks while clarifying a position adopted by an Iranian military commander who said on Wednesday that the U.S. military bases and aircraft carriers were within range of the country's missiles and would be destroyed if the United States made any mistake. In his interview, Takhte Ravanchi, also the diplomat, also touched on a major international agreement on Iran's nuclear program, which has been put in jeopardy since May 2018 when the U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the agreement. He criticized the European parties to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, saying Britain, France, and Germany have not compensated Iran for the damage it has received as a result of the U.S. withdrawal. Again, speaking for myself, that's what's done. When you make an international deal, seal the deal, everyone signs it, shake hands, smile, take the photographs, it's binding. And they've been keeping up their end of the deal. Europe, in hopes of maintaining a relatively cheap nuclear umbrella with the U.S., has been going along with the U.S. But returning to the article and quoting Iran's ambassador to the United Nations, quote, apparently besides the U.S., the Europeans have not been up to the job and have not honored all their commitments up to now, end quote. Iran says it is not after fueling tensions and keeps the door open to diplomacy and talks, despite Europe's failure to uphold its commitments under a 2015 nuclear deal. The diplomat, who himself was a member of the Iranian team in negotiations that led to the conclusion of the JCPOA in July 2015 in Vienna, said that Iran may move to the third phase of its measures to step up uranium enrichment. Again, as I said before, this is merely to 5% and nothing to, you know, get worried about. To force the signatories to the JCPOA to offer economic benefits to Iran and save the deal. You know, they're really happy when that deal went through because they didn't want to be on a war footing against the United States. And they're looking forward to prosperity and peace. But Trump, perceiving that it is something that Obama achieved, has been ruining that deal as best as he possibly can. And he's being pushed even further to the right by his advisors, Pompeo and notably Bolton, who want the U.S. to go to war. And these people are not isolated, of course. There's always been a war faction, in and around Washington and the Pentagon, wanting to eat that country because that's what they do. That's what they know. They're good at it, they think. The time is 9:18. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. And been talking about propaganda and lies. I wonder what it would look like if we actually acted democratically, if we actually acted as a people and did not act on lies. I wonder if we would impeach Trump for the murder, or at least for the negligent homicide of 6 children in border ICE custody. Do you know that before the Trump administration, it was extremely rare for a kid to die in the custody of the border police? Is something that only happened every once in a while. It was too much, obviously. And I won't excuse the Obama administration, the deporter in chief, for what they did. But Trump has obviously cranked it up for his for his propaganda purposes, for throwing red meat to the frightened racists that support him with great fervor at his rallies. Six children have died. So I guess if we were to impeach Trump for what he has actually done for this, then it would be for, let's say, let's obey the laws of statistics then and say that four or five of the children would not have died without his efforts at negligent homicide. So he should be put on the dock for that. And the penalties that we apply to murderers should apply to him. Likewise, he should surely be impeached for the molestation and rape of 19 women, at least. Why don't we talk about that? Because what? Because we've gotten used to it, haven't we? So I'll go to the first caller number. Call 503-231-8187. You're talking to KBOO Portland. This is Press Watch. My name is Teresa Mitchell. Who's this? Jenny.
My name is Jenny.
Hi, Jenny.
Good morning. I would like to talk about global warming and our environment, if I could.
All right.
We were recently informed by the mass media that we need to plant a trillion trees to counteract global warming. I believe that we have another alternative, and it's a simple one. Bamboo. Bamboo grows rapidly. It locks up carbon quickly, and it can be used for everything from furniture to housing. The timber industry needs it desperately because we cannot grow trees fast enough. It has the same tensile strength of steel, and I think we are being foolish to ignore the opportunity that bamboo provides for us as human beings.
Who would be planting it, and where would you plant it?
Everyone can plant it. We can plant it in the medians of highways. We can plant it in our yards. We can plant it in the unused spaces where former industrial facilities were at to help draw toxins out of the ground.
So we need
a
little funding
in our forests.
I think we'd need a little funding for that. Maybe not a lot. Probably could get enough by, say, kidnapping the Koch brothers and holding them for ransom. They could kick down a few billion, and we could plant that bamboo all over the place.
Definitely. There are species of bamboo that grow 5 and 6 inches in diameter, even in Alaska. So it's not like it is a tropical plant only. There is bamboo for every environment, and I would like to see it used more.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for calling with that. And,
Thank you. Just to be
perfectly clear, I am joking about kidnapping the Koch brothers for now.
Certainly.
Thanks for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Now, talking about propaganda, and I do intend to get around to climate change as well. But I want to quote from WSWS.org, one of the organizations that is downvoted so that you can't easily find it when you're surfing the web, WSWS.org. Those are the Trotskyists, and quoting part of one of their articles by Josh Darlin, the Trump administration is extending its war on immigrants south of the U.S. border by cutting aid to Central American governments and pressuring the Mexican government of President Andres Manuel López Obrador, popularly known as AMLO, into deporting more immigrants in June than in any month since 2006. Trump's predecessor, Barack Obama, backed a military coup against elected Honduran President Manuel Zelaya, does anyone remember that, in 2009, creating horrific conditions in Honduras that have forced tens of thousands of workers annually to seek a better life outside the country. And just speaking for myself, that is definitely something that was imposed by the U.S. Go look at a map of Tegucigalpa and identify the percentage of acreage in or blocks in the city of Tegucigalpa that belong to the U.S. military. I think you'll be shocked. But returning to the WSWS.org article, further indicating the U.S. government has no intention of heeding Michelle Bachelet's statement from the U.N. On July 3rd, DHS requested another 1,000 National Guard troops to the border between Texas and Mexico. The request, made public Monday by the Department of Defense, implements an order from Texas Governor Greg Abbott, a Republican, allowing for the state's National Guard to assist Customs and Border Protection. When Abbott issued the order last month, he called Congress a group of reprobates for supposedly not doing enough to stop immigrants. Quoting Abbott, they carp about a humanitarian crisis and about reforming an immigration system all the while refusing to pass laws and fix the problem, end quote. And he said that to justify deploying soldiers to block impoverished immigrants from reaching the U.S. The Corpus Christi, Texas Caller-Times reported, quote, the troops are expected to arrive at various locations along the border later this month to assist federal authorities, end quote. They will join 1,900 other National Guard troops and 2,300 active duty troops on the border. So now we're talking about a hell of a lot of troops militarizing our border, a war zone on the border with Texas and Mexico. Number to call is 503-231-8187, and Bill is on the air.
Yes, I'd like to make comment in regards to the lady who called in about the bamboo.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, bamboo is very prolific. It will grow here. There used to be quite a bit of it here in the valley. But before you get too carried away about raising a lot of bamboo, it doesn't take much and it will spread all over the place. It's pretty hard to control. And we've had that happen with other invasive species. So be careful before you go planting bamboo. Check it out. Thank you.
All right. An anti-bamboo statement. Well, okay. I don't want to go down the bamboo road right now myself. But I think it's an interesting idea. It's clearly time for revolution in this country. And I'm not talking about revolution in automotive design or dish soap fragrance. I'm talking about an uprising that will throw the billionaire class out of power. Why? Because they are steering this planet towards disaster. If the casual murder of black people by the police were not enough, if the concentration camps on the border were not enough, if the ascendance of a rapist to the presidency were not enough, the existential threat of climate disaster would suffice for Acasa's belly. Shall we pick a date? How about, say, 12th of October? I suppose that's arbitrary, but it's highly irresponsible and not to mention morally reprehensible not to overthrow the rule of the 0.001%. But I have a caller, and I'll go to next person. Hello, Paul. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Going pretty well, thank you.
I wanted to talk about the border.
All right. Please do.
I don't understand why everyone is mad at everyone, as far as Democrats, Republicans, centralists. It seems like all of them are just sitting on their hands. So I kind of put the blame on everything that's going on everyone that's sitting on their hands, which is the entire government. Regardless of, it seems like there's just a complete stalemate, and it's not like a stalemate because they can't come to a conclusion. It's just our team versus the other team.
Does it upset you that children have been found with scabies, lice, that they're sick from influenza, that they're the odor of their bodies without access to showers is so great that people choke upon entering the facilities?
I think there are worse circumstances than that.
Then, sir, you disgust me. Then,
well,
sir,
no,
you disgust me.
I don't think that's
then,
a
sir,
good
you
thing.
Disgust me. Please respond. How can you take such a cowardly stance towards your fellow human beings?
It's not a cowardly stand. Where do we draw the line? Because people in Africa are way worse than Central America as far as not having water. As far as a hierarchy of needs.
Why would you say such vicious and racist things? Why would you take such attitudes?
Why is that racist? It's we're all humans, so why wouldn't Africans who are in a worse life circumstance than Central Americans, not saying Central Americans are in a good circumstance at all.
Okay,
like,
it's racist
so
because
better.
You're evading the central question, which is why are we putting people in concentration camps and abusing their children on the base of their race?
Because we don't have enough money, and no one wants to pay more taxes.
Are you aware of the bloat of the Pentagon?
Absolutely. There's so much money that goes to military, it blows my mind.
Well, then we have enough money. We just spend it on the wrong things.
If we don't have a... Yeah, you know what? I'll say this. The government is not good at doing anything, and any money that goes any money that goes to the government does not get spent wisely. I was in the military, and I've seen the waste that happens. That I understand. What I don't understand is, if, for instance, the Democratic, all the nominees all raised their hands when they said they wanted free health care for anybody that is coming over the border. And I wish we all had free health care, and I feel bad that anybody gets sick or is not able to pay for an illness to be cured when there is cures out there.
Well, it sounds to me like you're coming around to a different attitude then. So are you not for the treatment of the children the way that they are, and the people generally, the way they're being treated at the borders, at the Tornillo camp? And
I, like you said, I wish they would take money away from certain bloated government programs and send it down to there. But if we tell the entire world, hey, anybody that comes across the border, if you're worse off than us, you're going to get free health care, and we're not going to send you away. I don't know at what point all of our border states would not be able to support that social
Okay, well, I think you and I agree that there are sufficient resources to allocate, so that's not really the problem.
Uh-huh. So, why... then it... For both of us, it just frustrates me that people are not voting on just because they're not... They don't want to have the other person have their way. Even though... Like, I think all potential legislation that goes towards money towards the border, which would include security as well as facilities for the people that are already there, I think that should be passed. And I don't understand on both sides why they're not like, you know, this makes sense. Like, whether you're for or against immigrants and documented immigrants coming over, we do need to have more money down there for something.
So can I get you to say then that you are for the humane treatment of people coming over the border?
Well, here's the thing. I absolutely am for humane treatment.
Okay, then you're opposed to the Trump administration.
Well, that's a huge lump, because I think that people that have served in the military, I know some of my friends that I've served with are homeless, and that blows my mind. If this is what I say. Here's my solution. Anybody that wants to come in that's an illegal immigrant right now in the U.S., they can stay, but they'll have to apply for the military.
Do you know that we have a great many of immigrants in our military who are not being granted citizenship?
That does not make sense to me, because there are certain citizens in our nation that don't want to go to the military, and people complain about people dying when they go off to war, so it would make sense to me if we actually let them go into the military, unless they couldn't meet the criteria for a soldier that we'd want to represent the United States.
Okay, thank you for engaging me. I have a couple of more callers, so I'll go to them, and I appreciate your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. I do like getting calls with people who have a differing viewpoint. I like to be able to talk these things out, and I especially liked it that caller allowed me to point out racism in what he was saying and, you know, didn't run screaming. We got to confront whiteness. We got to confront the racism in what we're doing, and if you get right to the point, I think, if we are honest, especially if we white people are honest with ourselves, what's happening is a hysterical flight to anything, and anything is manifesting as Trump, to maintain the power and hegemony that white people have had, because we don't know any other way, and we don't know what it's going to be like, and we're afraid it's going to be really bad, and this is driving racism. And I found time and again, if you really parse it, And if you take away the falseness, and if you take away the boogeyman, people can calm down and stop being racist. But we have to admit that we're being racist in this country, that this country is running on racism. But with that, I'll go to the next caller. Hi, Suzanne, you're on the air.
Hi. I believe that change starts with me. It has nothing to do with running around and complaining and all of that. I've done that. But I did some very simple things. I was a student who was without much funding to go to the University of Michigan, and I ended up in a sorority only because they had better food than the dorm. I had gained 20 pounds in the dorm, and I thought, no. So what I did, because I've gotten together with my high school group, my college group, I have set my standards. I said, no, I cannot meet with you if you live in a gated community. We need to meet on neutral ground. That's that. So I no longer have any contact with the women that were in that sorority, because the big majority do live in gated communities. And I don't miss them. I loved them at one time. But I don't share values with them at all. And I wanted to go back to church for some personal reasons. And but I've held my stand that we as human beings need to have an open dialogue in this building that happens to be the church. But I'm getting somewhere.
Open dialogue about what?
Well, about everything, about being afraid, about getting old, about this terrible trespass and death with the migrants. You see, all those topics are no. We're going to have the Bible study. No, we're going to avoid talking.
Well, historically, the churches have been used for civil rights movements. So, good on you if you can get that going in your church.
They have.
Do you think that can be happening in your church?
I don't see the individuals that go there every Sunday. I don't see that they're... I see that they're afraid, and that it's kept to all of the dicta out of the Bible. And I think we have to talk about real life. We have to talk about being afraid, being racist. We have to. And if it's truly an honest and respectful ground, that's where it starts.
Okay, well, I do think that that's a promising idea. And, you know, as I was mentioning before, certainly churches have been active in civil rights struggles in the United States historically. I do have some more callers waiting, so I'll go to them.
Okay.
Thanks very much for your opinions. And the number to call is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. It's 938. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, and Dennis is next.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to speak about climate change and global warming.
Okay.
There was an article you may know about. It appeared about 2 years ago in the New York Times magazine, which appears in the Sunday edition of the New York Times, the entire edition of that of the Sunday of the magazine, the entire edition was devoted to the article, which was entitled 30 Years Ago, We Could Have Saved the Planet. Now, that, it was the interesting thing about I just wish if people hadn't seen that, then you could go back. I'd probably go back in the archives of the New York Times and get it. And it really is worth. I mean, it'll take you several days to read it. It's written by Nathaniel Rich, but more interestingly, and just as interesting, I think, is the pictures. The photographs of places on the planet that have been affected by global warming, where you're showing the droughts and other things, all many different places. So that's about all I want to say. I just hope that people can get that get that article. Really, it's worth reading.
Okay, well, and I think it's a good point. I mean, a great deal of what we are now experiencing is cooked in. So thanks for your call. I know that. Tom and Karen are coming up, and so if y'all will hold on just a moment, I want to add that we are experiencing today more internationally observable effects of the climate, because interestingly, the method of forecasting hurricanes has changed. And if you look at the National Hurricane Center, part of NOAA, they're careful because of the current administration not to frame it as such, but because of climate change, they now begin their forecasting of hurricanes before the hurricanes actually form. They used to be quite a bit more circumspect about that. There were many reasons, not least real estate speculation, things like that. I'm not trying to fault them, but there were reasons for not calling a hurricane or not setting up the system for warning an area of a hurricane until it was actually spinning at 74 miles an hour. Well, that has changed because of the phenomenon called bombification. And so right now in the Gulf of Mexico, there's a great deal. Most of Gulf of Mexico is boiling with clouds. You can see it on the geostationary satellites. And so the forecasting has begun, and they've changed their methods because they are predicting 100% certainty that it will turn into a tropical storm in the next couple of days. This is different. This is the world we live in now. And Louisiana, particularly in the states in that region, are facing a huge problem because they've already had water dumped on them for days. And for months coming down the Mississippi, all this water is meeting up and topping the levees. And so there is a potential for quite a disaster happening right now, again, on the southern coast of the United States in the Gulf of Mexico. But if you're still there, then I'll go to Tom is next, I think. You still there, Tom?
Oh yeah, I'm still here, sure. Yeah, I just wanted to make some comments about the crisis on the border.
Okay, go ahead.
People are always wondering, how did we get to this point? And it's very simple. The previous occupant of the White House, a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, at this time in his first term had deported 400,000 people. And remember, he just got a Nobel Peace Prize. His response, deport 400,000 people. He ended up deporting close to, according to Christian Science Monitor, close to 3 million human beings were sent across the border.
Yeah, he was called the deporter-in-chief.
Exactly right. The Hispanics call him, Hispanic community calls him the deporter-in-chief. In fact, yesterday at Biden's headquarters, they were calling Joe Biden out on that. Now, he also expanded the detention centers. So Trump, as awful as that guy is, he didn't invent this stuff. He didn't just fall out of the sky.
He used it for his demagoguery and greatly worsened the conditions in which people are experiencing this migration. And also, by threatening to close it off entirely, he created the threat that he made up. He made it happen by telling people that pretty soon they weren't going to be able to come at all. So people who were fleeing conditions in Central and South America Central America, that we have created here in the United States, got up here just as quickly as they could. And so now here is this huge influx of people, and now we have the, frankly, grossly racist policy of terrorizing them.
But I'm just saying that each president lays the groundwork for his successor, and Obama certainly did it. also expanded Bush's war. People don't realize that. The Pentagon keeps track of every bomb that's dropped. And Obama actually dropped 70,000 more bombs on the Middle Eastern people than Bush. He outgunned George Bush is what he did. But I was just saying when there was deafening silence when Obama was doing this.
And I remember commenting on that here at KBOO. We're like, you know, this guy, he's so friendly.
Oh,
looking,
you guys
he's
did, I mean,
he's so you know, engaging, he's so good looking, and we're letting all this this stuff go by.
So he was a smooth operator, and he got away with it. He got a pass on all that stuff.
Yep.
And I close by saying one thing, that Obama gets a Nobel Peace Prize, so he deported millions of people, expanded the war. Mahatma Gandhi never got a peace prize. So that shows you how that prize
Henry
so
Kissinger
degraded.
Did.
Huh?
I said Henry Kissinger did, yeah, so it's a funny old world.
Yeah, Henry Kissinger,
peace prizes.
It's just really sad. Well, anyway, that's all I had to say.
Okay, thanks for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I believe Karen is next. Okay, well, you can call back in if you like, Karen. And we have been talking about climate change. We've been talking about the concentration camps on the border. And, of course, underlying it all, the great crisis in white supremacy, which is driving the politics that we see before us. And that applies to imperial wars as well. Definitely impinges on that. So, hello, Harry, are you there? No? Okay. So that frees up a line or two, and y'all can call in 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. As I was saying, there has been a great deal of rain in and around Louisiana. There's the Mississippi is topping its levees, and so all of this is coming together. I want to tell you about some facilities. I want you to think about these facilities. Some refineries and some nuclear power plants. We'll give you some details, give you some idea of where all of this water is going. The building hurricane in the Gulf, the flooding on the Mississippi, the dumping of 9 inches of rain in the region. We have four of the world's largest refineries in the United States. Among them, fourth, the Baton Rouge refinery, operated by ExxonMobil. It is, as you might expect, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It's on the Mississippi. It is close enough to be affected by all of this flooding. The Garyville refinery, operated by Marathon Petroleum, that is in Garyville, Louisiana, makes 500,000 barrels a day. These things make everything from jet fuel to wax, lubricating oils, gasoline, diesel. The Baytown refinery by ExxonMobil is in Baytown, Texas, not far away, and the Port Arthur refinery in Port Arthur, Texas, is the largest oil refinery in the United States, making 600,000 barrels a day, and man, does that town stink because of that, and boy, do people get tumors. That's going on, and then there's the nuclear power plants, but you know, I'll get to those in a minute because Harry called back. Hi, Harry, you there?
Greetings, Teresa. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Okay, yeah. First thing I'll talk about is the propaganda by the U.S. media. I switched to NPR. I usually stay away from NPR. I was listening to NPR, and they were talking about what was going on in Ukraine. And they said, oh, it's the only thing they would say is Russia's trying to get influence in Ukraine, and but never explain what's the civil war going on. And the only way I could find out was ask some of the Russian taxi cab drivers I take, and they're saying that the Russians, the ethnic Russians are being persecuted, the east side of Ukraine is mostly Russian. These are people who were born in Russia, but they're being persecuted by the Ukrainians.
You're talking about the Donbas and Donetsk regions, which have created autonomous zones and have fought off the Ukrainians with their own tanks.
Yeah, and so now we're uh, the the article was saying, NPR was saying, we're going to give them anti-tank weapons, you know, and so, which was going to escalate the war versus the new president of Ukraine said he's going to try to stop the war. So I'm not too sure, you know, so it's kind of like the NPR refuses to say what the ethnic Russians, what they're fighting for. They don't say what the even Russia. They only say one point of view, and that's it. And the BBC does the same thing. So I don't listen to BBC News. I don't listen to NPR.
Well, I'm glad you're talking to the Russian cab drivers to get that perspective. The U.S. has multi-year efforts. National Endowment for Democracy has distributed funds in its usual way, and they have been free with money to literal, not neo-Nazis, but actual Nazis in Ukraine, and have to the point that the most militant of the Nazi parties in Ukraine are deep into the government and to the militaries and paramilitaries. They're vastly, and I don't want to exaggerate that and say that's the only people who are pro-U.S. in Ukraine. That would not be true, but they heavily infect it, and the Russians point to that accurately and say, look at the scum that you have promoted to bring up all of this separatism and warfare and et cetera. And then I suppose probably you can get those cab drivers to talking loudly when you talk about the Crimea and the Black Sea Fleet, but that's a whole, that would take us down a whole different road right now. Do you have any comments about immigration or climate change at this point?
As for climate change, I was listening to the news. What's going down in the Gulf right now? They're talking, since the Mississippi River, with all the rain in the last couple of months, is almost cresting at flood stage, and now this storm is about ready to hit New Orleans again. So it sounds pretty bad, and also the climate change here. Have you noticed how muggy it's been?
Oh yeah.
In Oregon, I mean, usually we don't get this type of muggy weather in 60 degrees and 70 degrees being this muggy. So it's a major climate change going on, but what can we do?
Okay, well, thanks for your comments. I'm going to go to the next caller in just a moment. Now, I talked about the refineries, the major refineries that are in the region, but there are also several nuclear power plants. And I want to remind you that a nuclear power plant cannot afford to be flooded out. It cannot afford to lose its supply of power, because ironically, a nuclear power plant requires online power to keep operating. They have, if they maintain their emergency diesels well enough, then they can go offline for a bit, but they can't stay offline and keep producing power. And there is always danger when there is flooding. So these stations in the area that you need to be aware of and need to pay attention to are the Waterford 3 Nuclear Generation Station, which shut down for Katrina and also shut down for the 2011 floods, the River Bend Nuclear Power Station in St. Francisville, Louisiana, the Bartlett Nuclear Power Plant in Walker, Louisiana, the CEFCO Nuclear Power Plant in St. Landry, Louisiana, and the Grand Gulf Nuclear Station, Port Gibson, in the region in Mississippi. If you hear something in the news about these, in the next couple of days, it's likely to be bad news. So these are things to watch. And I'll go to the next caller. Amy is on the air. Hello, Amy. Did I talk too long? Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I'm here. Yeah, I totally, completely agree with you about the immigration policy. It's racism, but it's also greed, because apparently cronies of Trump, and if it could be proven, I wouldn't be surprised if Trump himself, they're getting $750 a day per child that they're abusing and neglecting, and there is no greater trauma to a child under the age of 9 than to be removed from their parents. Then on top of that, to be malnourished and have to sleep on concrete floors and so forth. It's
indefensible.
I'm heartsick. Yeah, and the chicken pox and the lice and the, I'm just heartsick. I've never been more ashamed.
It reminds me. I think it's just on the edge of the sort of mobilization of moral outrage that started taking place in the Vietnam War, when people, when Haiphong Harbor was mined when the rice dikes were blown up by B-52s and people started to starve. And the photographs of people mangled by U.S. weaponry started coming back. There was a moral outrage, and it was, of course, it was more than doubled by the fact that there was a draft, and so, you know, we had skin in the game, so to speak.
Yeah,
but,
that helped. Yeah, exactly. As long as it's not affecting me, we can turn a blind eye. But I also want to call you to task, because that former serviceman who was not feeling it for the children like you thought he should and like I thought he should, but the reason why, and you glossed over it, is the pain in his voice when he thinks of his fellow servicemen who are homeless. And you got to listen to make change. You got to listen to what's going on with people. You could hear the pain he's going through. And the thing is, and this is where I don't agree with him, he's afraid. He thinks it's either or. Either we take care of my servicemen friends who are homeless, or we take care of these kids on the border. And he's wrong.
Yeah, it's the zero.
Never in America have we not been able to step up if we want to, if we focus on it.
I think you're exactly right about
that. I just want to encourage.
It's the zero sum idea.
I just want to encourage him to have courage. Have courage. You know, and don't close your heart to others just because you see people you care about being hurt. But then it's also up to you as a radio host. You got to have compassion for these people calling in, because
I'm not going to have compassion to the point of not calling them out on their racism. It's like we all have to.
Call them out. But this is where I disagree with you. You didn't hear what he was hurting over. You didn't hear that.
I didn't consider it sufficient to allow him to aggress against the people being brought up to the border.
Oh, I don't. I don't either. It's not. I'm calling him out on his lack of courage. You got to have the courage to know that we can take care of your people and we can take care of the people on the border. And in fact, stop thinking of it as either or. It's all of us. It's all of us. They're us. Those people on the border, those children, they're us.
Sure.
You know, oh, well, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. So I was saying the water is converging on the Louisiana region from the south and from the north at this point, and from directly overhead, another climate disaster in the making. And I bring it out to perhaps sharpen the popular determination to do what is necessary to stop climate change. And to do what is necessary will require a revolution, because we can't keep capitalism in place and stop climate change. Capitalism is set up, corporate capitalism is set up for its short-term profits, is set up so that the thousandth of 1%, the billionaires, can effectively rule us. And that's done, as you know, in this country by our system of only those who have sufficient funds to drown out the others on paid media can hope to get elected. It's just it's not a very subtle system. It's simply a system of rule by the rich, and we're going to have to stop it. This means that we actually will have to have a revolt. We'll actually have to agree to stop working at some point, at the very least, a general strike. And last caller, you have 20 seconds.
George.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi.
Quickly, I think all rapists should be castrated. And also, I saw something on the B-2 bomber, the hovering bomber that has a capacity of holding 80 500-pound bombs piloted by two people. The unit costs $1 billion. There are 24 of them on inventory. They've only flown 5 missions, all of which were useless. And we are paying for this. This is a tip of the iceberg for Pentagon waste. And we don't even know what the budget is for the Pentagon.
Okay, yeah, they hide it pretty well. And I'm sorry, I'll have to cut off at that point because I have run out of time for my show. So thank you for calling in. Thank all of you who have participated. And thank you for engaging me very well today, I think. you should. So coming up on KBOO, more of our radio zine, and we're going out to you via 90.7 FM by our great big red and white Eiffel Tower on the West Hill and other frequencies in Cascadia, and you can listen to this program on KBOO.FM anytime you like, going out to you on KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:59. Coming up next is the Heather McCoy Show.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Coley Neighborhood Farmers Market. This is a weekly event at 5011 Northeast 42nd Avenue at Alberta Street in Portland. The market features local farmers and businesses, and this Thursday, July 11th, there will also be face painting and music by Pete Krebs. Again, that's the Coley Neighborhood Farmers Market, Thursday, July 11th, from 4 to 8 p.m. at 5011 Northeast 42nd Avenue at Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meeting